on this snowy morning. I want to talk about something today that, when it was first explained to me some years ago, really lit my practice, really moved it to a new level. And of course, I'm hoping that you'll feel similarly inspired. That's about lucid living. And lucid living is compared to our normal waking state that I will call the waking dream state. As lucid dreaming is to dream. Maybe out of order. So, in the normal dream state, things seem very real, right? We are totally caught in the dream. And I think we've all had that experience where you wake up with your heart pounding or you're completely adrenalized because something happened in the dream that was frightening or charged or emotional in some way. Because things seem so real in the dream state. And then, of course, the lucid dream state, there's something in you that knows it's a dream, that knows things aren't real, but is experiencing the dream state with some interest and with some consciousness. Oh, what's going on here? But it's not lost in the dream. And when we wake up out of sleep, the normal state, which is called sometimes in Buddhism the waking dream state, is we are lost in the content of our life. We're lost in our thoughts, in our feelings, in our the world around us, the sense experience, our perceptions of what's going on. And we're completely identified with those things, right? Whatever the circumstances our life are, we're caught in them. And when you feel that you're at the mercy, you're lost in your life, you're lost in whatever is going on, and you're at the mercy of it, it's kind of scary, is it not? That's why we suffer, because we worry about what might happen. And there's a part of us that I'm going to call this the ego-identified mind, that is, because it's worried about what might happen, that's it's sort of like an internal spin doctor that starts up in us that tries to mitigate how scary life can be. Have you noticed that? It's like a voice in your head. Like, for example, maybe you get up and your partner barks at you, and it's startling. And the spin doctor starts, and it could have any number of tactics. One tactic might be, wow, she's such a jerk. Why is she like that in the morning? I'm going to sleep in a different room. I don't really like this. It's trying to take the experience of being barked at and make it in some way to justify or put yourself in a position of control, right? Or it could take a completely different tactic. Oh, yeah, he barked at me, but I know he's just getting over a cold and he has to go to work and he's probably feeling overwhelmed by the day. Again, the whole point is that's a little more skillful, but the point is it's trying to make the circumstances of your life a little bit less harsh, right? So the ego-identified mind is trying to create a buffer between you and the life that you're lost in, your feelings, your sensations. In Buddhism, we call this nama rupa, the body mind. And when you identify yourself with the experiences of the body mind, right? Sensations, sense impressions, thinking, perceiving, you're lost. You're lost. And the ego-identified mind, because you feel like it is trying to give you a sense of control, that's suffering. And part of it is moving you out of the moment to try to buffer the moment, right? If you're thinking about making excuses or trying to argue about why your partner's so cranky in the morning, that buffer zone is between your thoughts and feelings about it, which is what you're interacting with, and what actually came in terms of reality, in terms of what that person said to you. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So, lucid living, on the other hand, is living from the observer seat, which we talk about from time to time in this practice. It's living from the observer seat means you know that who you are is the consciousness, the awareness that is experiencing life, that's experiencing your partner's harsh words in the morning. It's a different seat in which to experience life. And we might call this the difference between being seated in consciousness of the self, in the seat of the self, versus experiencing being lost in whatever the flow of life brings you, where you're really at the mercy of what happens, right? Whether it snows, how your job's going, how your health's going. Instead, that's being, when you're identified with that, you're at the mercy of it completely. You hope things work out. When you're seated in the seat of consciousness, you know you're experiencing those things, but you're not those things. So I wanted to give an analogy in order to flesh this out and make this a little bit more real. And the analogy that, this comes from Mickey Singer, by the way, which I really touched me, was the analogy of going to a movie. Now, when we go to a movie, the reason why we love movies is it's the pleasure of getting lost in the movie, right? I mean, imagine seeing a movie where there's beautiful scenery, you know, you're seeing this amazing photography and the action that's going on and the characters that are going on. And when you're at a movie, you actually forget that you're actually just sitting in a cold, dark room with strangers around you. You're lost in the movie, right? That's what the pleasure of the movie is. And the movie only uses two of your seven senses, sight and sound. So while it can really draw you in, especially like an IMAX theater where they try to make it actually more surrounding you, it's still possible in a movie to get out of it. We've all also, I'm sure, been to movies where you're halfway through it and you're going, oh, I just don't like this movie. You start looking at your watch. You're looking at who's around you in the theater. You start thinking about maybe we'll go out to a restaurant afterwards and what we're going to eat. You can come back from the movie into yourself. Right? Now imagine that movies were able to add sense perception. Say it probably will happen where there'll be virtual reality equipment on our hands, you know, so we can actually touch and feel what's going on in the movie. If any of you remember Aldous Huxley's book, Brave New World, with the feelies, he developed this concept where the way the state controlled people is they were required to go to movies called the feelies where they had VR equipment, and so they could not escape the movie. And so whatever happened in the movie was what people thought and felt for that movie period. They could not get out of it. That's how Big Brother controlled people. Interesting science fiction phenomenon. So now let's imagine that beyond the feelings, let's think that touch and smell were added to the movie. So you're watching Aushak a lot and you're in the chocolate shop and you actually smell the chocolate and you can taste the chocolate as well as what the characters are saying. That would be really, everything lines up. You're seeing it, you're smelling it, you're tasting it, you're touching it. You would be really, really caught in that movie, would you not? Now imagine that beyond that, your feelings aligned with what was happening and your thoughts aligned. Whatever the character's thinking are your thoughts. Whatever the characters are feeling are your thoughts. You would probably no longer be able to leave the movie. Think about that. Think about what it would do. You would only go to a movie where you're pretty darn sure you knew what the plot was. You knew you were going to like it and that the love story ended up happily. Think about that. I'm guessing the horror movies genre would be gone. I had to stop seeing horror movies back in the 70s because I would wake up two nights later and be terrified. I'm like, I can't do that. So imagine that everything in the movie is lining up, the thoughts, the feelings, the sensation, the sights, the sounds. Think about that for a moment. The reason why this is important is this is the predicament we're in. Our lives, because everything lines up, the body experience, the mind experience, the perceptual experience, because it's all lining up, we are literally lost and trapped in the movies of our lives. And we do feel at the mercy of whatever happens to us, the part of us that's lost in this. And it makes life scary, does it not? Because a lot of stuff, there's no certainty in life. Things are changing all the time. So in other words, we forget who we are when we're in the waking dream state. We forget ourselves. So now imagine lucid living. The same experiences are happening. Same job, same family, same body, same everything. But you're not lost in them. There's a part of you that knows that you are what is experiencing those things. So what would be the fruit of that? This is audience participation. What's the difference between lost in your life and being seated in the seat of awareness, knowing that your life is what you're experiencing? For me, I'll tell you, there's a lot less fear. It's just, okay, now this. There's a lot less suffering. I feel more curious. I feel more creative. I feel more free. And I feel more inner spaciousness. Does that line up with your experience too? Yeah. Sounds a lot like practice, right? So for the first time, when we do this practice, we suddenly become aware of the projector of our movies, right? What projects it is just we're so identified with it. And once we see the projector and we're actually what's behind it, it changes our relationship to everything. So, and this allows the third noble truth of cessation to become a reality in our life. And cessation means we realize while we are experiencing a human life, we are actually not the body-mind. We are not Nama-Rupa. It's the aperture through we as a function of awareness experience the world. So the question is, what is needed to go from the waking dream state to the lucid state in life? What do we need? And I want to point out two things that we need. And the first one I invited you to practice with. The first one is we go from an unconscious focus of attention to a conscious focus of attention. Now, when we talk about the focus of attention, we all know that, right? We've been doing it our entire lives. If I said to you, now look at this candle over here and notice it's not lit, we all know how to do that, right? It's like, or think about what you had for breakfast yesterday. We all know how to focus our attention, right? We do it all the time. But when we're lost in the dream state, we are unconscious of that focus. It just goes from object to object to object. If you notice that one moment, that's what monkey mind is, right? Monkey mind is an unconscious focus of attention where the mind's just kind of flitting around, but it's just kind of lost. And you know, if a big sound comes up, that's where it is. If a poster of Tom Cruise comes up and you like him or you hate him, it's there. It's totally unconscious. It just kind of goes. The second one is identification. So let me talk about, so both of these are the proper focus of your practice. So when we are lost in the waking dream state, the focus of attention is completely external. We're focused on sights, sounds, the phone ringing, driving our cars, our thoughts that come up, our feelings that come up. Those are also external to the seat of consciousness. It just flows outward all day long. It's kind of like putting a pinprick in a balloon. The energy just seeps out all day into whatever it is that happens to catch our attention. Another aspect of an unconscious focus of attention is it's always out of the moment because it's looking for that buffer zone between actual reality and your spin doctor managing that reality. And so there's always a buffer where it's always looking to move out of the now. You notice that too? And so you end up going through the day and feeling like we miss most of our own lives because we're not really there for it. And that's a draining, an energy draining experience. No wonder why we're tired at the end of the day. So in the lucid state, the focus of attention is centered within. Part of the attention stays, we might call it the observer, the witnessing consciousness, but part of that focus of attention is directed inward. And when we do that, the inward focus is our energy pump. It's what fuels us. I don't know if you noticed it in your practice the last half hours, but when we keep some of our attention focused inward on the seat of the self, we feel energized. We feel actually stronger when we're finished doing that. That's why we do it. So when we're in the moment and we leave some of our focus of attention inward, then we become more independent of whatever's happening around us. So making the focus of attention conscious is usually the very first instruction we give in meditation. The very first thing usually we have people do is either a body scan or focusing on the breath and being aware that that's what you are doing. Now focus on the breath. And I think we all know this is the simplest thing, but how powerful it is that when you focus on your breath, instead of just letting your attention be just drawn out of you into whatever, when you bring it back consciously, even for about 3 breaths, you feel centered. You feel present. You feel the power of your own consciousness. This is the first thing that's necessary for lucid living. So the second one is identification. And the purpose of Vipassana is seeing everything clearly. And identification is seeing that all the stuff that comes up, all the nama rupa that comes up, is not who we are. Now, Gurdjieff, who most of you may not be familiar with, but that's where I started my spiritual path, taught that when we put the word I next to anything that comes up in nama rupa, in our consciousness or in our body experience, that's when we become lost. So there's a difference between thinking is happening, seeing is happening, hearing is happening, and I'm seeing, I'm thinking, I'm hearing. When we put the word I next to these things, that there is no consciousness or self behind, we are lost. We become lost. So that was one of the teachings that Gurdjieff had that just really changed my life. So when we take the word I out, which we do in practice, don't we? Then there's just breathing. There's just sitting. There's just human experience rolling along. So we sit there watching away, just being present for whatever rolls in. Is that not our practice? So the difference between somebody who's lost in life and at the mercy of life in the waking dream state and somebody who's lucid, it's not like your consciousness is different. Consciousness is consciousness. It's your focus of consciousness and your identification with what's going on, putting I next to things that aren't you. I mean, if I put I next to this cushion, I'm this cushion, it's really hard for me to deal with life very effectively. And it's the same way when we put that word I next to our feelings, our reactions, our body sensations, and so forth. So when you rest the focus of attention consciously within and you lose your sense of identity with conditioned circumstances, dukkha ceases to be a problem. And that's, you know, dukkha, it's just the turbulence and the bumpiness of life. You go out to go somewhere, the car doesn't start, or there's the big dust up that happens, you miss deadlines, you get a cold right when during a week that you don't want one. Dukkha ceases to be a problem. It's just what you're watching. It changes all the time, but that's now just a situation, not a problem. Dukkha is just dukkha. So, and identification with the movie still sucks us in all the time. That's normal. It's not a problem, because being conscious of our focus of attention and not identifying with things that aren't us are the life ring that pulls us out of the water. So we remember those two things are our toolbox for conscious living. From Mickey Singh, I just a quote that he wrote about this. He said, as you pull back from nama rupa, or conditioned objects, into consciousness, the world ceases to be a problem. It keeps changing, but there's no sense of that being a problem. The more you are willing to just let the world be something you are aware of, the more it will let you be who you are. The awareness, the ground of being, the Atman, or the I am of being. You realize you are not who you thought you were. You're not even a human being. You just happen to be watching one. It's amazing. So, but the other thing is this conditioning that keeps us asleep, that keeps us lost, it's very deep, is it not? It's not something we can get over in some weekend intensive, which is why we practice, why we come back again and again. And when we see that, now our practice is our most precious jewel. It is the pearl of great price, because it's exactly what moves us into lucidity, away from just being at the mercy of living. Which is why at the end of each period, we bow in gratitude. That's the deepest gratitude I can think of. So I'd like to close with a poem by Rumi, who understood all this very deeply. And the poem is called The Breeze at Dawn. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill, where the worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Thank you.